Welcome to In the Moment, Hour 2. I'm Kara Hetland, filling in today for Lori Walsh. Thanks so much for being with us. We're going to spend this hour talking about education in South Dakota. In 2015, the Every Student Succeeds Act replaced the No Child Left Behind Act as the federal standard for education. The ESSA requires each state to compile its own education plan to meet the new standards. South Dakota Secretary of Education Melody Schaap says the ESSA allows states to tailor plans to their own needs. After a year of conversations with various stakeholders, the South Dakota plan is now online and open for public comment. SDPB's Jackie Hendry discussed the plan with Secretary Schaap, and they started with the plan's four major milestones. Students are proficient in reading by fourth grade. They're proficient in math by ninth grade. There's an increase in academic success of Native American students, and all high school students graduate ready for college, career, and life.
The first two are based on research that for students to be successful really throughout their academic career, that it's really critical that they are proficient reading by the end of third grade or the beginning of fourth grade. And I taught elementary school for many years and did a number of different grades. And there was a huge jump in what is required of students from fourth grade up. So we spend really those first, 4 years, kindergarten to third grade, and teaching students how to read. But the expectation from fourth grade on is that students have to be able to read to learn. Mm-hmm. And that is just a huge milestone. And if they don't have that foundation, when you think about what science is and social studies is, it's not just content, it's being able to read and digest the material.
Right.
Very critical milestone that we have. And so our plan is very focused on helping schools to really look at how students are performing in those first few years. Our assessment is based on that. Are students on track to meet that? And that's a really critical milestone. The other milestone is, again, at the end of eighth grade, beginning of ninth grade, based on research that if students it's really critical that students have what we call the basic foundational skills in algebra and pre-algebra by that level. So a lot of times our students take algebra in the ninth grade. The research tells us that if students have really strong foundational math skills, they will be more successful throughout their high school academic career and then preparation for post-secondary. Mm-hmm. And it's just a really basic foundational thing that I think, when I talk to parents, employers, and whatever else, those are two critical skills that we need really to be successful in life regardless of what path we go. Mm-hmm. The third foundation is based on the data that we've been collecting in our state. So again, this would be very unique to South Dakota in that we continue to see a large achievement gap in the performance of our Native American students. And I say this very cautiously because mm-hmm. I think that sometimes that we recognize clearly that our academic measures are setting a precedence based on all students being at the same place at the same time by a chronological age. Mm. What I mean by that is that we're assuming that those students come to school ready to learn in the same way that students do in many of our other areas, and they have many unique challenges as well as, I think, cultural and other things that in their communities. And so it is one of the reasons I think we're looking at some changes in the way that we assess in the future. It's not going to happen quickly and easily, mm-hmm. but we do need to own the fact that we have issues in getting kids our graduation rate in those areas. Because they might come to school at a different level, that does not mean that the students are not as smart. They're just as smart and capable, but that we need to be aware that they might be at we might need to catch them up at a different rate. So I'm really sensitive to that area, and that it's really looking at not just closing the achievement gap, but knowing and doing the right things and supporting those schools. Mm-hmm. And then the final one is really based on what our whole plan is, I believe, in that we want every kid to have a multiple experiences. When we talk about that academic indicator that's really different in our plan, we've talked about this for a long time, about all those things that make kids more well-rounded as they enter into leave the K-12 system. And those multiple factors are based on that we want kids to be ready for that next step, regardless of what it's going to be. Mm-hmm. So it's not just getting ready for college, it's getting ready for whether they enter the workforce and are they ready to do that. And so in K-12 for so many years, we measured success on just getting kids graduated, and then we kind of wiped our hands and said, you know, good luck. And now we are a partner in so many ways in understanding we have a huge responsibility about preparing them for whatever it is next, and that's our job, is really to make sure that when they leave these doors that they know exactly what they're going to do, where they're going to go, and that, you know, we've given them the skills to do that. So that's really the fourth goal, and we've been very focused on that over the last few years and really shaped the work that we do around those four.
Wonderful. That leads me to a couple different questions looking at assessment. One question, maybe we'll start with that kind of idea of, you know, high school students who are graduating and maybe they don't feel that college is the right path for them. How, for college readiness, we often look at ACT test scores and things like that, but for those wanting to go directly into the workforce, how is that readiness measured?
Right. You know, right now, there's a couple things that we do currently, and then I'll talk about what our plans are in the future. Mm-hmm. There is another assessment that we provide for schools at no cost. It's called the National Career Readiness Certificate. Mm-hmm. Acronym is NCRC. And in some places, they call it the Work Keys Assessment. And this is used a lot in our departments of labor across the state of South Dakota and across the nation. Mm-hmm. And what it measures, or better measures, is some of those basic skills that I would say employers are looking for how, you know, some of those really basic skills for reading, locating information, et cetera. This assessment is, we have a partnership actually with the Department of Labor. We go out to schools, they give this assessment, and kids receive a certificate that shows different levels of what their skills are that can be matched with what an employer's expectations are. That's one piece we've been doing, and it's not required, but we're seeing more and more high schools that are using that with their students as another type of measure. Mm-hmm. For exactly what you're talking about is going directly into the workforce. In the future as well, we are talking internally a lot about our assessment system is really based exactly what you said, is based on, we currently give the Smarter Balance, and then most students who are headed for college take the ACT. But we know that that is not always appropriate, you know, for mm-hmm. every single kid. And so our Smarter Balance assessment measures whether students have that preparation for post-secondary, but we feel that there's an opportunity for us to tweak that system, and we're looking at in the future thinking about what are the skills that students need that are directly for the workforce. So if a student is really focused on that they're going to go into, you know, they're going to go into a career path of being an electrician, it's almost what we would call badges, and that term is, I'm using that kind of loosely at this point in time because we haven't defined it. Mm-hmm. But taking our assessment system that gives, you know, if they receive a credential in the future, how can we give schools credit for students who, you know, become credentialed in a certain area that really gives a pathway directly into the workforce? A CNA, maybe they are taking courses in the healthcare area when they're in high school, and can we earn a CNA certificate and can become, you know, use that right directly out in the workforce that they don't intend to go to college. So we're really thinking more long term about trying to make this that the assessment system doesn't drive what we do, but rather we drive the assessment system to match what we want for kids. It's a much different way of looking at it compared to what we've done in the previous with NCLB. Give every kid the same assessment, assuming that every kid needs to be college ready, and that's just not only is that not realistic, but it's also really not fair to the student and also to the school district.
Right. And then also beyond or maybe lower than the high school level, I noticed in the plan a discussion of measuring proficiency in ways outside of strict grade levels, that the Department of Ed is considering something along those lines. What might that look like, measuring students' proficiency not based on their grade level?
So I going back to the conversation that we just had about Native American students who come to us, and it's not just Native American, and so I want to preface that. we have kids who come to us at different levels, and you know, our system is still based on this idea that it has, you know, we have the 13 grades, and when you're 7 years old, you should, you know, by the end of first grade, you should have the same, every kid in the class should leave with the same ability, mm-hmm. which is just, that's not true. And it doesn't mean that one kid has less, you know, less ability going forward, but they might have come in with, you know, maybe they haven't been read to in the first 6 years of their life as much as the other child who had experiences. So if we are really want to think about our system being more fluid in the way that we're providing education, which a lot of our districts are due with, you know, what we call customized learning or competency-based learning, where, you know, the kid comes in and you know, it isn't like the teacher stands up in the front and is a sage on the stage delivering the same content, but instead, if the student is moving a little bit slower, they help them to master those skills before moving on. The other kids may go faster. So again, back to the assessment, if students are moving through the system at a different pace, then we should be assessing what they have mastered when they've actually gotten to that level. So a good example is we test every student at the end of third grade. Our assumption is that when every child is, you know, 10 years old, is that third grade? About 9 years old.
Close.
I'm trying to think through back to that they should have all have met the same, and you know, that they should have all mastered the same content, et cetera. Instead, in our schools that are really doing that modified, customized learning, then when they put kids into a system and they see that this student is just still mastering the second grade standards, this student is already mastering the fourth grade standards, it would seem only logical, you know, if we were using logic rather than a 100-year-old system, we would test them at that level. Mm. If it makes any sense. And so really looking at how do we do that, how do we determine fairly, we want to make sure that we're not dumbing down the system, but instead that we're really looking at the student as an individual rather than as a third grader by age, by grade, and then assuming that every single student is at that same level just because you're 10 years old. And just if you think about it logically, it really is rather interesting that we would assume that, but we have been for hundreds of years. Mm. So we're trying to think about how can we make that more relevant. I think also just long term, if you think about students and when they are put into a situation where, you know, I remember this, you know, in school, when I was there 50 years ago, but I also remember, I think, that as I taught school, right away kids would say, that's the smart kids and we are the dumb kids. And mm-hmm. that's only because the system itself drove that, where mm-hmm. if kids were seeing success as they went through and we didn't test them all at the same level at the same time, I think, honestly, that kids would, we would see a more successful student go through the system because they would see some success along the way rather than that. So it's really a bigger vision, but that's kind of what we're thinking about down the road. How can we meet kids where they're at and assess them appropriately?
Great. I know a new measure under the Every Student Succeeds Act is this idea of school quality, and that looks different at both the high school level and then elementary and middle school level. And I'm curious, at the elementary and middle school level, stakeholders have pointed to the idea of positive school climate. What are some ideas that are being considered for how that sort of experience is measured?
You know, that's a really tough one, but it's one that I think we all agree is so critical. It's just that being fair in measuring it is what I think that's why we struggled so much in those work groups. Mm. The idea is that, you know, that the school itself is that positive environment where the student feels welcome, and et cetera, that, you know, it's providing opportunities for kids in many different ways. But I think that some of the ways in which those can be done is that it's not just through the student eyes, but also through the parent eyes in the community. Some of it, in some states, they're using, like, survey opportunities where surveying, you know, parents and so forth about the type of climate there is. Same thing with surveying staff, you know, teachers and other staff throughout the school. And so it's a more difficult thing to measure, but it's also something that we know can really make a difference. You know, you can walk into a school and right away you can feel it, whether or not it's a positive situation. At the high school and on up, and I think we feel this even at the elementary, I think there's also the idea of it being a safe environment. Yeah. Fortunately, that's a huge conversation that we should never have to think about, but it's part of our country today, that students feel safe, number one, but there's also all the issues with bullying, all those factors that provide that caring, safe environment, that there are ways in which we can look at that as well. So some of it's survey types of things. Some of it is providing, different types of trainings that you can do that we feel that we could bring in sort of that safe school climate across the board. And so, it's trying to find the appropriate tool to measure it. Because when you talk accountability, it can't just be, we think. Instead, there has to be some normalized measure that gives it statistically at some point. It's a little squishier, but we know it's important, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. And going back to our conversation previously about our Native students, I know that there exists the Ocheti Shakoin essential understandings and standards, and I've heard some discussion of possibly incorporating that to meet cultural needs of students and perhaps measuring the quality in that way. What can you tell me about those standards and what that process of implementing them might look like if they haven't already been put in?
This is such a important part of our Native American culture, but I think what we are even more focused on, that we feel it's an absolutely critical component in all of our schools. So it's interesting that we would think that only the Native American students should know about this, when really that's part of our entire, a lot of our history in our state. Mm-hmm. What we've done with those, we started in one content area. So, the temptation is, the standards have been out there for about 3-4 years, and, to teach those in isolation is very difficult, I think, especially for teachers who are not as familiar with really the stories that go behind them. Mm. So we took our social studies standards, which were just redone in this past year, and maybe the best word to use is we wove them into the social studies standards so that they become integrated throughout the different grade levels. So it's not like, okay, kids, today we're going to learn about this. Instead, it's like, oh, as part of the history or social studies or et cetera, in fourth grade, it becomes part of the social studies standards. And so we started there, and then we're going to do the same thing across other content areas so that they are integrated rather than out there standing alone. I always think about a good example is I taught fourth grade, and we taught South Dakota history. Mm. And it was sort of this separate thing that stood by itself, and then we never really talked about it again. I don't know, throughout the rest of your school, the rest of the grades, and I kept thinking, my gosh, are we really expecting that students are going to maintain, this knowledge throughout their entire K-12? Mm-hmm. So I think the way we're approaching it is much better, and what our goal would be is that this becomes also a measure of where we see these standards being really incorporated well into our public school systems across the board, not just in our Native American schools. One final thing on those, on the Ocheti Shakoin essential understandings. Over 100 interviews on our Wo Lakota website that have lesson plans and other things that go along with them that are completely aligned to the essential understandings, and is an amazing resource for any teacher who is trying to really bring that to life. So those are things that we were thinking about building into the system that we could give evidence that our school districts are using well to really bring us some sensitivity to that history and background.
To kind of wrap things up, we've mentioned that the plan is available for public comment for about a month. What sorts of comments would be most helpful to the Department of Education, and what are you hoping to gain from that process?
I really do appreciate you asking that, because we really do want people to take a look in being able to really kind of dig into where, what would be useful for them. So if I were to take this from a parent, and I'm a parent who's looking at the plan, I think the important thing would be, and the type of feedback we'd want is, does this plan, would it provide information for your school about your child's education that would be meaningful to you? So in other words, is it important to you that we are measuring attendance for your school and holding your school accountable for that? Or instead, should we be looking at some other measure to see, how important is school climate, or what are some ideas that might be important to you? And if they're looking at the plan, is to be able to say, is this an appropriate measure and a fair measure of the types of things that I do within my school? I think sometimes educators feel like they're not in control of all of those different things, but that's why I think the plan is more balanced than it used to be. When we used to assess every kid at the same level and there was just one thing, we didn't have a growth factor in there, it really held teachers hostage in how they were performing. But I think they also need to look at the other indicators and say, are these things that I can influence and how can it be helpful to me? I think the other group that is really going to be helpful if they is somebody who is in business and industry, because we're feeding them our kids. And so does this plan and do the things that we are measuring really better prepare students for the workforce and being able to provide them with the type of student that they want? So what things matter to them? I think they would say attendance matters to them, kids showing up on time. I think that they would say foundational skills like the National Career Readiness Certificate and having kids who are... So what are the things that matter, and what do we not see? So I think that there are things that everybody could weigh in from different, lenses that we don't always see, because I think we're just in our little world of education. So I would really encourage people to take a look and be very candid so that we can take that feedback and collect it and put it together and make adjustments if necessary.
The South Dakota Education Plan is available online. You can make comments at doe.sd.gov. That was SDPB's Jackie Hendry spending some time with the Secretary of Education, Melody Schopp.